Akima Price finds ways to connect people in underserved communities with positive experiences in nature to encourage healing, provide meaning, and strengthen those communities. Tonight, here in Chattanooga, she will speak at the Camp House, starting at 5:30 p.m., as part of Civic, a quarterly speaker series by Chattanooga Design Studio. The title of her talk, Meaningful Engagement in Stressed Populations. Before coming to this city, she joined us by phone from Washington, D.C. for a conversation, along with Eric Myers of Chattanooga Design Studio. Eric, Akima, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Eric, tell us more about Civic.
Civic is a quarterly speaker series in honor of Robert C. Taylor. It is our hallmark urban design education program at the Chattanooga Design Studio. We've been running the program for 2 years, and we're really proud to have Akima join us this month.
And why did you want to bring Akima to Chattanooga?
Well, Civic, as a speaker series about urban education, really is our chance to bring issues that humanize ideas, trends, current practice of urban design issues related to cities. And Akima's work has been really engaging in the way that we understand community engagement and how parks can benefit the quality of life of residents.
And Akima, the title of your talk, Meaningful Engagement in Stressed Populations. Unpack that a bit for us.
Yes. You know, I think we say meaningful a lot. Like, I know people in the environmental field, they're aware, but there's like these meaningful watershed experience grants. Early on, I realized, like, while it may be meaningful from the environmental values lens, it may not directly be meaningful in the case of a kid who's coming from a home where the mom is on drugs or where, you know, there's just some form of trauma and stress. And so while I can see from my perspective how a boat trip could be meaningful for a child in that setting, if they miss the mark on engaging the parents, or if they miss the mark on providing lunch, or if they miss the mark on those other key places that make it meaningful in the context of that kid's life, then it really doesn't full circle bring meaningful into the value of for that kid. It just is another box. It's another environmental grant that just keeps moving and says that they led X amount of meaningful engagement experiences where, you know, I've always kind of sat in the corner like, no, you're not, you know? And so I've been able to, in the work that I do, at least partner with these environmental groups to build their capacity to think about that perspective. And then what they do from that is on them. But just so that people can really, when you say the word environment, think outside the box of trees and grass, but include people and places. But then also when you say meaningful, really think about it beyond what your values have been around what makes something meaningful for you.
And your experience includes working as a National Park Service ranger in Lake Mead out west.
Oh, that was 1993, very long ago. But that was at least the start for me because, well, my family actually is originally from Chattanooga. I didn't grow up there, but my father did. And so when I got this opportunity, that was obviously one thing that, kind of attracted me and made me want to do this. But fast forward, you know, my experience with being an urban kid who just, you know, had an opportunity to be a park ranger, I was able to get better context for the value of nature and kind of those type of experiences, like experiencing places beyond just where you live. And just the oneness of it all, and just also how we're specks of dust in this bigger world. And so, you know, that actually helped me coming from stress situations and, you know, having my own individual traumas to kind of really not feel as alienated and like it was just me, but just that it was a, you know, the larger world around me, that there are things at work, there's things that are bigger than us at play. And so it gave me this, I guess, homeopathic, holistic perspective and a lens that, you know, I was able to bring to my work in environmental education. And while it took me leaving certain organizations because a lot of the missions did not include this type of thought, it made me very successful on the ground because it resonated well with the people I was doing the one-on-one work with. And so then that success made me attractive to groups that I could start contracting myself earlier in my career. And then fast forward 20 years later, really be able to hone in and have a niche area where I'm able to, you know, one, build the capacity of the folks on the environmental side to work better with stressed populations, but then also to build the capacity of stressed communities to take advantage of environmental opportunities. Like, I just actually got off a call around, you know, stormwater management grants that the Department of Energy and the Environment in D.C. wants to do, but they want to kind of do it with non-traditional partners. And so we're kind of thinking about, you know, how can storm drains memorialize kids who've been shot as a result of gun violence? which would be, you know, an engagement point for people in the community to see value in that stormwater project. So kind of really just thinking outside the box about how we work together to help the planet as a whole.
What are some other tools that flow from this perspective that you have developed over the years that organizations and also the stressed populations working together can put into place?
Oh, wow. It looks like a variety of best practice. I mean, some of it happens like through the lens of the community where it's not anything I'm doing different, but maybe they do something different because they've made a relationship with like a Friends of Park group that then helps to host a summer camp for their kids that they just wanted to make sure were somewhere safe. It looks like tools that I've developed and will be actually using in my workshop there in Tennessee, where we do these dice. We create these dice, and the dice represent like social issues, and then another die represents social assets, and another die represents physical issues, and another die represents physical assets. And we roll the physical asset dice against the community issue dice. So you might roll crime and parks, and you kind of go, wow, how can parks help crime, or blah, blah, blah. And it's just tools that facilitate conversations between non-traditional partners. And so the things that come out of it can vary from a relationship to an actual activity that then they go and lead with other people because now they know how to do it. Some of this has turned into after-school programs where you're meeting in the middle of the road with taking kids from in-school suspension programs and connecting them to invasive plant removal projects, which not to look at it as a form of punishment that you're out there, but as a way to let out anger. It looks a lot of different ways.
Describe how you see nature as encouraging healing through the lens of what you call trauma-informed environmentalism.
Here's another one I could go on and on about, but I'll try to pick one example. I mean, for example, I've seen where doing a raptor education program where you train adjudicated youth in how to work with these raptors, nature doesn't judge people. Nature doesn't hurt people per se in terms of like the things that we do as humans to each other. And so I think in one case, nature just represents safety for some people because it's a place where they don't have to worry about being hurt or being violated. Another way that I think nature helps is just like just having live animals, like what sparks in most people I've worked with in the course of my thousands and thousands of people I've worked with have similar responses when I bring an owl in a room. It's just like you kind of go back to being a kid. And you got kids now that can't even really be kids because of the state of the world. So when you put them in these natural settings, you spark that innate wonder that comes from just seeing something bigger than you or experiencing something that you didn't buy in a store or that you're not controlling. I think nature, quite naturally, from just the things that you can harvest from nature, from the smell of a flower to the smell of rain or to the calming sounds of birds, I would not even want to say that everybody responds to nature the same way, because I know some people that silence doesn't represent safety to them. Like they get concerned when they're silent and still. But for the majority of the populations that I've been serving, you know, I've been able to leave it open enough that nature shows up in a variety of ways to them as healing. And I just kind of am standing by documenting these, not physically documenting, but, you know, kind of documenting these ways and sharing these best practices amongst a bigger network. Like, I do trauma tracking when I work with certain populations. And so when we're sitting in a park doing that, I get a different response than if we're sitting inside of a classroom or sitting inside of a room with a door. We've got, you know, restorative justice circles happening outdoors now where most times they've happened indoors, promoting probation officers to meet with their clients in natural spaces as opposed to indoor spaces. You know, just small ways that you are making it more of a norm to be in natural settings. And then also looking at the preconceived notions that Black people don't go out in nature, which is not always true. People convene in nature. They may not be kayaking as much as other people, but they're cooking out or they're doing these other things, and that's just as valid. And so the other side of this is stop trying to quantify what counts as healing or this and just allowing it to be what it is for those people. But again, building the capacity of those people to then build some type of sort of case study or documentation of best practices around it that they can share with others. So that it becomes, you know, a new narrative about how people engage with nature and how it shows up as healing for them.
And Eric, all that Akima is talking about here is timely for Chattanooga, given how we are surrounded by nature and how the city is growing and changing and how we're dealing with issues of affordability,
stressed populations, including the Black population here.
That's exactly right. You know, Chattanooga fits squarely into national trend, international trend even, in that the urbanization of cities is happening at an unprecedented rate. You know, the World Health Organization predicts by 2050, 66% of people will be living in urban populations in cities. And so it's imperative that, particularly in cities like Chattanooga in the United States of America, that we figure out, as we repopulate our centers, that we figure out how to create community health and well-being and centers of well-being for the people that stayed.
A lot of the populations I work with here in D.C. are directly affected by gentrification. I'm currently contracted to help build a friends group for a national park, Anacostia Park, which is bordered by populations that are affected by gentrification. And so while these people are having to leave places that mean something to them, we offer the park as a place of place-based experiences that won't go away. I mean, hopefully. I mean, the Park Service is still susceptible to things like that at times as well, especially a portion of our park has already been sold off. But for the most part, the part of the park that people use, that can be a space where you can still, while you may not be able to still live up the street, you can still come into this and feel like a piece of your home is still here. You can still remember cookouts as a child here. We can still help you maintain some type of place-based connections with land that may not have been where your house was, but it still represents a piece of your history, and you feel some form of connection and comfort in knowing that you still have this park to come to.
Eric, details about the event and where people can go online for more information.
The event will be held at the Camp House. The doors open at 5:30 p.m., and the program will begin at 6 p.m. You can go to our website, chattanoogastudio.com/civic.
And that's C-I-V-I-Q.
Thanks, Ray.
Eric, Akima, thanks so much.
Thanks, Ray. Appreciate you.
Thank you.